Hey Kraut, how's your stomach?
My stomach?
From all those pancakes. Because you
Oh.
just did it the other day.
Yeah, I did it like 2 days ago, yesterday.
According to YouTube, yes.
I did it this morning.
This morning, yeah.
Yeah, it was my stomach currently.
Currently.
I actually do feel like long-term effects of this, like it has increased my appetite for the weeks that have followed such
So
a
your
bad.
stomach expanded.
Like I eat more than I did before I did that. And yeah.
No, that makes sense. Your body, the human body is an amazing thing. It just
Nothing like
survives and advances, you know?
3,000 calories of just straight carbohydrates.
Forever
Nothing like
expanding your
just a
stomach.
bunch of syrup and butter just diving in there. How
Know what
is
though?
go ahead, sorry.
I ate a pancake today. So no,
Ooh.
they're not ruined
Wow.
for me.
Back
I
on
will
the
continue
horse.
my love of pancakes. Yeah.
Back on the horse. I
I think
love
it's part of me at this point. It's part of my personality. It's just pancake a day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
What was your favorite interaction during the entire, process?
To be quite honest, just the people that you encounter in a Sherry's at 3:30 a.m. are just an electric factory. I mean, getting to meet the chef firsthand, and I will call him a chef. He's not a cook, he's a chef.
Nice.
Because
No,
his
that was
pancakes were
apparent.
just an absolute decadent piece of art he was sending out. The waitress, just a very nice old lady.
Oh, unbelievable.
So sweet. Just servers coming over, hanging out with us, other patrons of such an establishment. Truly an experience. So
Awesome.
couldn't be more thankful for the role, actually.
Do you regret not playing Big Boggle?
You know, I do regret not finding things to kind of trick the mind a little bit. I didn't have much. I tried to read a book and I just couldn't really focus on the words, going into glycolytic shock about halfway through.
Do they
So,
start like morphing into mini pancakes, like in your mind?
yeah, a little bit.
Okay.
I mean,
That makes sense. What was your strategy, I guess, like coming into it? And then did you stick to your strategy or did it evolve?
Well, that's kind of the question, isn't it, Kyle?
It
Yeah,
is. That is the
so
question I asked,
that
correct?
is, yeah,
Who's
those are the
Kyle?
words that just came out of your
Who's
mouth.
Kyle?
I mean, sorry, big tread.
Thank you.
Yeah, so the strategy was to pace myself. And I think, going back to did I follow that, I don't know if 4 pancakes in 11 minutes typically classifies as pacing myself.
Probably not.
So no, I mean the strategy was clear, but the execution was poor. It was more than poor. It was just downright awful. And that really set me up for a really rough 7.5 hours in that Sherry's.
Awesome.
All
Well,
right,
I'm
that's it. We
glad.
don't have to talk about anything else revolving dice or punishments or anything like that. We can keep going.
Brad's got a roll, folks.
How was
Brad has to
okay.
roll. We're not letting him off the hook. And we have new punishments added recently, which is exciting. We a little brainstorming session as a group today. Brad once again he went away from over unders. He didn't pick an over. It was an incredible thing that he
It
walked
was
away from picking an over, but he went for
and
the
it didn't
spread
work.
and it just didn't work out for him.
I
So,
think I need
although
to
I
come to the
didn't.
realization that I'm just really bad at this. And I think every time I sit and watch football, I look at these games where I'm like, how did that spread work? Like I'm trying to take in knowledge, learn that. Even though Jacksonville is horrible when they're home and they have 13 points given to them, maybe I should take them. Like maybe teams don't lose by 13 at home.
Not very often. No.
So I'm changing going forward. I'm changing how I'm looking at this. I'm learning, I'm evolving, and it's going to come. My day of reckoning is coming where I'm going to have to do all these punishments.
It's all about learning too. Like the learning curve is an important thing.
And being in a
Just
Nacho
like
Libre costume in the middle of Forest
that's gonna be
Grove
awesome.
at a laundromat is really going to teach me a lot about spreads. So I'm
And
really
well,
confident.
speaking of learning, Kraut learned how to fade Rodgers and move away from a mistake,
Really
and
proud of you
it
for
paid
that.
off for him.
Thanks.
Yep.
We're talking about sports fandom, and I did have a little bit of a crush on Ayahuasca Rodgers, but you got to know when to call it quits. You really do. And so, that haircut, his whole demeanor, it's in the toilet. So I'm glad
I'm really glad Ryan Tannehill, who you thought was Ryan Fitzpatrick, was able to get the game done for you.
That was amazing. I listened back to that, and that was quite the scene.
Most definitely.
I was just going along with it. Patrick. Yeah, I was like, yeah, wait a second.
As he continued to like go down the line, I was like, oh, he's
really big beard. I'm like, wait.
He's not talking about the right guy.
Played for a bunch of teams, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, my question honestly is how did the New York Giants go from being one of the best teams in the NFL? They're only 3-point favorites at home against the Lions, who've won one road game in 2 years, and then just ran.
You said it yourself a while ago, Tread. They're frauds. They're fraudulent.
They are frauds. I mean, that this week can confirm that, and we're going to find out more on Thanksgiving about them. But they're definitely frauds. But yeah, Brad, do you want to roll first, or do we want to go do our locks of the week first?
Well, the die of death, when you lose two in a row, actually, it changes into a glow die. So I'm warming up the glow in the dark die of death.
Because it's so dark in that room. So that
So why don't you explain the two new punishments and I'll roll.
Sure. Yeah, so we've added two new punishments this week. One of them is going to be number 4, and it's going to be called Sucks to Suck. And that's when a contestant or a person who has received this punishment has to go into each host's house and vacuum, though he will do so in a Kirby outfit. So a Kirby costume. For those of you who are unfamiliar with Kirby, he's a Nintendo character who sucks things up, and he's a big pink ball. So it's going to be visually hilarious. And then number 3, I'm trying to remember, to be honest with you right now.
Chef, isn't it Chef?
Oh, correct. Brad, what is number 3 called?
Formerly known as, it is actually, no, not formally. It is just known as Freaking Italian. Is what the punishment is called. I am going to have to, I already know this is what I'm going to do. So I'm just going to say, I'm going to have to make a pizza from scratch, wearing an embarrassing apron and chef's hat. And then we're going to get a future guest certified chef in the Forest Grove area to eat my food and tell me everything I did wrong. Most likely.
Well, you could do it. You could do great. You know, it's in the blood. Yeah. You could make a bomb pizza.
You're right. It's not You're right. Up. You know, Britt and I make pizzas sometimes with the dough and everything. So I'm going to take I,
the
I've
dough
taken
and everything.
I know what I'm doing.
With
everything.
The dough and everything.
Starting from the dough.
All right. Well, should we get this going? Let's see. Let's remember. Number 1, Caddy 18. Number 2, Christmas caroling, which would be fun as well. Number 5 is the Harry Potter marathon. That is just an absolute nightmare. And then also number 6, cosplay karaoke, which is what I'm really hoping that Brad rolls here.
So I am assuming that I'm gonna get, I think 5 has been around long enough that it's time. It's that
to roll on the camera though, so you're not manipulating the results since you are the guy rolling. So let's figure that
That's
out.
That's the softest thing I've ever
No, the softest thing ever would be for you to decide that, oh look, I got a 1, guys. Well,
I would never never do that. I would never do that. But let me think here. I can roll it on this, like a notepad.
And then just show us.
And then just show you. Okay. Yep. So for those of you on YouTube, you can see what I'm doing here. Okay.
Wait, right. I don't know. I don't like the surface. I hate to be that guy, but we're going to drop and it's going to smack and just hold. So we're going to need something a little bit harder there.
You want something sturdier?
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe a book.
Well, since you're looking for something sturdy, I'm going to give the folks something sturdy, which is my lock of the week, which is the Seahawks -3.5 at home against Raiders.
So, I will be rooting for that to not hit.
There's a little bit of buffer there for you. Did you find something sturdy?
Like,
oh, elite? Great. If you love travel, you know what
also,
I mean?
Also, altamaritravel.com.
Absolutely. All right,
sponsor
Brad.
The pod.
Let's see it.
Okay. The dice is here. It's getting hot. Here we go. Please, if don't be a 5. Ready? This is up here.
Yep. What is it?
It's
Brad.
A 5.
Brad. Tilt
it's a 5.
It. Brad.
It's a 5.
Brad.
Can you guys see that?
Is that a 2? Is that a 2? Oh, it's a 5! It's a 5!
We're losing them.
Yes. You're a wizard, Harry. Expelliarmus, Brad. Did you like did you like my Harry Potter references? Did you hear him?
I hate you, and I hate this.
That's so good. I can't wait for that. Brad's kind of had a couple punishments that aren't like that bad. So for him to get the Harry Potter marathon, I think he's
Is now it's valid. Fitting. Oh, my
God. Do we also want to discuss new rules for the when you're on red alert? Okay, so if you are on red alert going forward and you are able to successfully pick correctly 2 weeks in a row, you are no longer on red alert and that clears. So just so the folks at home now know, and I'm currently on red alert. So I'm, you know, this is a big pick for me this week.
As am I.
Oh, how convenient.
As is Kraut, but he's stacked one right now. So if Kraut wins this week, which this week his lock of the week is?
We're going to take the Vikings to cover.
Or minus two and a half.
Minus two and a half. Yeah. To win by 3.
Okay.
At home. Is that all right? Thursday night game? We're chilling.
Yeah, go for it. Why not?
That's fine. Yeah. This might not get out before that, but that's okay.
That's okay.
That's totally fine. Mine is I keep doing it, I guess, but I keep going against what I said. No, I just called the Giants fraud about, I don't know, 5 minutes ago, and I'm going to take them +9.5 at Dallas.
Oh, wow. Another Thursday
pick. I like
Thursday
that too,
pick.
By the way.
Another Thursday pick. Well, good. Well, now we've got some Thanksgiving, you know, odds on the table. So it's going to be a fun viewing experience for show fans if they hear this before Thanksgiving. But regardless, for the show members, it will be fantastic for us. So, and to be honest with you guys, that's who we really do the show for, is for ourselves and not you. So, hey.
That's not true. That's not true. We love you guys.
That was our lock of the week.
Yeah, no.
That was our lock of the week. And yeah.
Tread, what's your death row meal?
Honestly, Brad, I don't even think it's a question. My favorite meal on earth, besides Chipotle on a travel weekend, of course, is the Treadway at Phil's 1500 subs in Forest Grove between Godfather's Pizza and Safeway.
Oh, really? What is on a Treadway?
Well, Brad, I'm glad you asked. The Treadway typically comes in the large variety. It is chicken, bacon, Yoshida's, Chipotle mayo, and Swiss. I could recommend adding like some mushrooms and maybe, some grilled onions occasionally, depending on what kind of vibe you like, but
let's not get crazy.
Essentially what you got on a Treadway.
Mm-hmm.
And Brad, let us add that it's on one of the best whole wheat rolls of bread on earth that they make homemade the morning up. So, I mean, not to mention that Brandon, Phil, and Merrill are some of the best people in the area. I'm talking the whole Portland, like general area.
All of it.
They're going to make your day every time you step into the shop. So the next time you're in Forest Grove, Brad, and everybody who listens to the pod, I'd stop by Phil's 1500 subs or even call for catering and just say the big Tread and Brad buffet sent you. All right, we're back on the pod. This clown Ryan Kraut here wants to put some stakes on this upcoming game, this rivalry game.
Really good.
In the state of Oregon, between the Oregon Ducks, who are favorited by 3, might I add, going to Corvallis as they play the Oregon State Beavers. So, Kraut, what do you want the stakes to be on?
I think if the Beavers cover, then I think I get 100 points. And if the Ducks, obviously, you know.
We're just doing it on the line? Yeah, just for 100 points?
Yeah. Do you want to go just 100 to each of us or 100 from our points against each
like
other?
Like we take points like from
you,
each other?
You take 100, you take 100, I take 100 from you.
I'm not out on that. I think that's a fun little thing.
Okay.
Yep, little
so
shaky.
For both of you, I'll write it in right now. So, okay.
Lock that
Kraut, you're saying 100 of Tread's points that the Beavers will win by, or they'll win +3.5.
Yeah, they'll cover the spread.
Okay.
Okay.
I just hope you're prepared to watch a little
Beavers.
Beavers getting their ass kicked. And I just hope
they don't call it the Duck State, you know?
Yeah, but it's run by the Ducks, so.
Is it?
It has been. Do you want me to pull up like the historic, like last, I don't know, like 20, 30 years?
All I know is in
that. I do that with UW
years.
Fans a lot. That's one of my favorite pastimes. Is
you want
UW fans talking crap about the Ducks?
What happened this year? I forget.
Against UW?
I don't remember. Yeah,
you guys lost to UW too. I don't know. What is this conversation?
But No, okay, but I'm just saying.
Like, yeah, Oregon lost to UW because Bo Nix broke his ankle in the middle of that game. Like,
oh, okay.
Everybody knows that.
Yeah, shout out Jake Haner and the Fresno State Bulldogs just absolutely putting UNR to work this last weekend.
Okay. Just Brad off the top rope. I guy.
Like, I just want, I,
let me plug my friends real quick. Hold on. Yeah, let me get my friends involved in here. Hey, I also know the long snapper for UNLV who took on Hawaii this week, and he had some good snaps. So shout out to that guy because I grew up with him and we played flag football together when we were 10. So we're
Tread,
boys.
Just because your friends don't play sports anymore and we still have friends that play sports, you don't need to hate. Like,
I don't have any friends that play sports.
I was going to say I don't really have any friends. So.
Oh, yeah, you have friends? Wait. No, but I shout out where shout outs are due. Jake walked into UNR and absolutely put a whooping on him. And
does Jake listen to the pod?
Yes, he does. Shout
does
out Jake
like Harry Potter?
I don't know.
Maybe you guys
not as much as together. Me. Not as much as me. But Kraut, we just update heat check score, by the way. I have 175.
What happened?
Yeah, Kraut, I don't want to talk about.
Kraut. Yeah, Tread, you're minus 50, and Kraut, you are now minus 50 just preemptively because Tennessee
you
has
just
zero
like,
shot.
You're like, yeah, they're not.
Yeah,
no, nope. Just cut them.
It's over.
I understand that.
Yep. So it's 175 to minus 50. So whoever gets the 100 points here is going to be feeling pretty good. The other one's not going to be feeling too good.
Let's go Ducks, baby.
Mm.
Folks, one of the best environments in Forest Grove is found at Black Dog Bar and Grill off of 19th Avenue between Domino's and Rainbow Lanes. At Black Dog Bar and Grill, you can enjoy a meal while listening to great music and wonderful service from a friendly staff. From lunch, dinner, to catering events, such as parties or weddings, Black Dog does it all. Brad, what's your favorite menu item at the Black Dog?
Well, Tread, I really love the street tacos. They're super authentic, and you get a great bang for your buck. I also really like the ribs and the cornbread. I think the cornbread is one of the best sides in all of Forest Grove, if not the world.
Well, awesome, man. And I'll tell you what, I really love that cornbread as well. I use it. I eat it as like a dessert with honey and some butter. Are you kidding me? It's unbelievable. So everybody, stop by Black Dog today for lunch or dinner, or just enjoy the great bar they have in the back where you can watch football every Sunday or just kind of hang out. But whatever you do, just make sure you let them know the Big Tread and Brad Buffet sing. Black Dog Bar and Grill. Go get it. Well, we're here with Nick Kotchek, who is currently an MLB fan free agent. So, Nick, you want to talk a little bit about kind of what your situation is and kind of where you're at right now?
Yeah, I just wanted to start off by saying thank you for taking the time for having me on this. I've been looking forward to it for a couple weeks since, you know, we've kind of had this idea. But yeah, I guess I'll take it from the very start. Baseball is definitely my favorite sport to watch. Played baseball when I was growing up, so it's something that I've always really loved. My brother coached at Pacific. He played college baseball at Pacific. So baseball has been around the family for a while. And awesome. So kind of when I was growing up, we had PlayStation 2. And so we'd be playing like MLB baseball, and we had like all of those every single year. And we'd, you know, Tyler and I would play that like every single day throughout the summer, like wake up early in the morning and we'd play. And so my first ever memory of like becoming an MLB fan was like, I was playing as Albert Pujols on MLB. Okay. I was like, you know what? Albert Pujols, this is my favorite player, plays for the Cardinals. It's my favorite team. So kind of started out my fandom as a St. Louis Cardinals fan. Had great times with them. Great team. won a couple World Series with them, and that's like the only championship that I've really won as a fan. And so nothing but great times. Albert won some MVPs. Then he goes over to the LA Angels, and so I was like, all right, this is kind of the only guy that I've ever known. I'm sticking with him. We're an Angels fan. Let's do it.
Okay.
And so kind of start that transition over. A little bit of a rocky time there. Not the best, the best team. Made the playoffs once. But I remember getting this guy, Mike Trout. And then I was like, whoa, this Mike Trout guy, he's kind of like giving me the vibes of what like Pujols was at the start of his career. Because once Pujols came over, he wasn't the same guy. He his numbers declined a bit. He still had some like solid years, but he definitely wasn't that MVP guy that he always was. Mm-hmm. But then the Trout guy comes up, he's super excited. And then I was like, okay, this is pretty cool. Like, we've got this really good young talent. I've got my favorite guy, Albert, here. Like, this is pretty awesome. Signed Josh Hamilton. Then I was like, look at this. Like, this team is coming together. This looks pretty electric. Obviously, as we all know, the Josh Hamilton thing didn't turn out. The Albert Pujols didn't really turn out. I always was like, all right, it's fine. Like, just kind of stick through. We're an LA team. Maybe, you know, we'll splash in free agency.
Money.
We'll get it going. That kind of never really happened. we end up cutting Albert Pujols. And I remember reading that tweet and I was like, what? Like, not expecting this. Like, just like kind of had the sink in my heart where I was like, wow, this is wild. My favorite player is just done. Sorry, I skipped over the whole the Shohei Ohtani guy.
Yeah, I was gonna say that was kind of when you said like they had all this money and didn't sign anybody. I'm like, well, yeah, there's this guy who basically is two players at an MVP level, but like, yeah, I mean, like, who cares about that?
Yeah, kind of skipped over the Shohei Ohtani guy because he's not very good, right? So anyway, we'll rewind it a little bit. I remember being in college, hanging out with my roommates, and then being like, this Shohei Ohtani guy, like, he's supposed to hit bombs and he throws 100 miles an hour. This can't happen in MLB, right? And so then the Angels end up signing him. I remember being super nervous he was going to go to the Mariners because I cannot stand the Mariners. I'm sorry.
Okay, I know. So that's off. That team's off.
That's okay.
Was that? Yeah. Yeah. So didn't want that to happen. Was super stoked to sign him. Remember watching him pitch against Brad, your A's, and just being like, wow. This guy is nasty. That splitter is dropping off. Like, this guy's disgusting. Mm-hmm. Hit bombs. So yeah, once he kind of came in, I was like, okay, this guy's legit. Back to the COVID year kind of a thing. He only pitches like, I don't know, like 2/3 of an inning, gives up tons of runs. And I'm like, okay, like maybe these injuries are stacking up to him, but like, he's still elite offensively in my mind. Like, mm-hmm. He's hit bombs. Come back from the COVID year and this guy is like unreal. He's hitting bombs. He's like, I don't even know how to describe it. His like season where he won MVP was unlike anything that I've ever seen. Cause like, he's going out there as our ace, but he's also like one of our best hitters too. Like, we have Mike Trout, Shohei Ohtani, and we still can't do anything. Like, we're still not winning. Nothing is happening. And so I'm feeling desperate. I remember we signed Anthony Rendon in free agency. Yep. And that summer or that winter, it was like, my mindset was like, all right, we need to sign Gerrit Cole. Like, we obviously need pitching right now. Like, mm-hmm. This is the best pitcher. We have to sign Gerrit Cole. He's from Anaheim. Like, this is a no-brainer. This is going to be a huge splash. And then getting the notification that he signed with the Yankees, and it was like, well, what are we doing? Like, what's going on? And then, like, I don't know if it was that same night or like a day later, I get the tweet notification that we signed Anthony Rendon, and it was like, okay, we're literally just like Rendon, obviously coming off the World Series was electric, super great, but it kind of felt to me as like we just need to spend money. Like, we're in this time period where like Ohtani's obviously one of the best players, Trout's a great player, like, we have to spend money. And so we bought him. That's also been kind of like not really panning out. He's dealt with a lot of injuries, and I still think he's a great third baseman, but like, we got to figure out a way for him to stay on the field and like be healthy, because that's like so much money to have him just like not playing. So we got,
you're talking
him.
Like, you're still an Angels fan.
Yeah, I was about to say, what's this week?
I'm just trying to go through where I'm at with the Angels, why they've broken my heart so much.
No, it's okay.
You're
really letting it go too, and that's awesome. Get it all off your chest.
Yeah.
So yeah, when we talk here, I want to go first. When I want to try and persuade Nick to maybe come to the dark side. I know you kind of already have your team picked out, but if that's the end of your story, I got something to go. That's really going to pull your heartstrings.
It seems like he's still got ammunition.
No, keep going.
Well,
keep going.
No, I just kind of wanted to bring up, like, I don't know what the answer is. Obviously, I've been kind of following along. with the start of free agency here, I know that they signed Tyler Anderson, which, like, first of all, for a draft pick too. Yeah, first of all, go Ducks, great. But like, at the same time, I don't think, I don't know. I'm not like super thrilled about the signing, honestly. Like, yes,
he's not Jacob DeGrom.
Yeah, yes, we need pitching, but I don't know if that was the answer for them. I saw that they traded for Gio Urshela as like a depth piece, so that kind of helps with the Rendon being injured part. But outside of that, I don't think that they'll make that many more moves in the offseason. I don't know. They're up for sale right now. Maybe they could get a new owner. Who knows? Who knows what's happening? And so that kind of uncertainty is like, all right, this is kind of like the time to look at all the options out here.
Really good. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to step in here.
Yeah, go for it.
So first, as you know, diehard Oakland Athletics fan.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's going to be tough to convince you to come to a team as in the same division. I understand. I get it. I understand. But hear me out. First and foremost, Pujols was also my favorite player growing up.
Yeah.
And I have a pretty fun story. I went to a game in Oakland Coliseum. I had a Pujols jersey. And I my parents were like, we're going to, for your birthday, we're going to get you diamond seats. You can pick any game, one game. It's like, let me go see the machine.
Right.
So I got a Pujols jersey. I was stoked. I go up and I wait along the tunnel of the away team dugout. I'm just sitting there waiting. And I have the Pujols jersey draped over, waiting for him to sign it. And I'm in all A stuff except this Pujols jersey. And he walks and all these people are walking up, and all of a sudden this guy walks up. I have no idea who he is. And I'm not even like looking up because I'm a shy little kid. So I'm just like looking at how, you know, this big baseball player in front of me. I'm like shy looking down, and he grabs my Sharpie and starts to sign my Pujols jersey. And I knew it wasn't him because it didn't look like him. And I go, no. Okay, I'm saving that for Albert. Can you sign my ball? And he goes, yeah, bud, sure. And then I look up and I'm like, okay, I don't know who this guy is. Signs my ball. And I look and it says Mike Trout. And I go, oh, okay, that's cool. Didn't know who he was. He was a rookie. So I was like, okay, that's cool. Albert comes out and he doesn't sign my jersey.
Maybe you have to settle for the Mike Trout ball, man. What a bummer.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate. and it was his rookie year. It was his rookie year, and he hit three doubles that game. So crazy, crazy day. But Pujols did sign the ball with Mike Trout on it, but he didn't sign the jersey.
Oh, my goodness.
But, wow. So that's the first thing, okay? You and I, we got that. We have that connection, okay? That's there. The second thing, my Oakland Athletics will do the exact opposite of what your Angels have done to you for years. The first part of that, they won't buy anybody. So you don't have to worry about that. Okay. They won't spend a dime. Even though they have it, they won't spend it. Okay. So you don't have to worry about the Mike Trouts, the Otanis, the Rendons. None of that's happening. Your heart will never be broken. Okay. Second, they won't go out and sign people in hopes to make the postseason. They just will hope they never make the postseason. So they keep losing. So then they go to Vegas or build a shiny new stadium.
Oh.
And then they start winning. Then so losses.
This is like
now,
a long-term investment play.
Long-term investment for a team that's eventually going to win, hopefully, in the future. But they're not going to win now, so you don't have to worry about that.
Yeah. But
that's my pitch to you. We have this Pujols connection. Come join. You're already wearing green and gold on your hat. Just come join to the good side, okay?
I like it. I will say the current teams on the table kind of feel like there's a lot of not necessarily a lot of success right off the bat.
Okay.
I'll just go ahead and say the teams that are on the table. So, of course, there's the option to return back to Anaheim. You know, an Angels fan again. There's the Arizona Diamondbacks. I had a pitch for the Arizona Diamondbacks. Good family friend Carson Kelly plays for them.
Kraut, that's I'm on the queuing table. You.
Let him get through his options.
Okay.
And then my brother is a big Cardinals fan, and so possibly the return to where it all started is also on the table as well. And they are the team that's more of like there's more success there than the other ones for sure.
Is there a potential mystery team in the mix that might exist in the Bay Area but is not in Oakland?
I this mystery team has, it's come up, but if we're being completely honest, it's
dead. Thank God. I was going to log off.
All right, that's happened. Okay. It's all right. The team that's going to sign Aaron Judge this offseason, like whatever. It's cool.
I saw he was in San Francisco. Is that facts or is cap or no? Yeah.
He's in San Francisco visiting today. Yeah. That no is cap. Not okay. cap.
I hope it's raining and cold. And yeah.
They're going to sign him, Brad. It's okay. Get over it. Kraut, what do you got for Nick?
Nick, pleasure. It's kind of crazy. It feels like I'm talking to Koch, kind of. It does. Tyler.
Well, he is a Koch.
Well, he's definitely
but yeah, obviously sticking with the team you've been with for that long could kind of be like a kind of a tug at the heartstrings kind of story here, maybe down to the end. Let's just talk about the Angels because they are a potential option.
Yeah.
Run me through not only, you know, the worst of the worst moment that you've been through, but also the highest of the high. Like, give me one moment that just really felt like a knife to the back. But then one moment where it's just pure elation. Let's just kind of relive both. I think that might kind of help, you know, solidify or change your mind about these Angels.
Honestly, so Ohtani's MVP season was like, yes, of course, we've had the Trout MVP seasons. And like every season that guy has, it always feels like every game I watch, it's like, okay, this is Mike Trout. Like something special is going to happen. But like Ohtani, it's like this dude's pitching, this dude is hitting, and like he's doing both of those things at such an elite level. And so watching him like that year and even this year, like I thought it was incredible. I went down to Anaheim over the summer and like made sure I picked out a game that I knew he was going to pitch and hit. And so watching him do that, it was insane. I watched him pitch against Luis Castillo with the Mariners. Oh. And like that pitching matchup was, it was incredible. But yeah, Ohtani like came out first inning, gave a leadoff bomb to why can't I think of his name? Rodriguez, right?
Julio.
Yeah. And so I was like, oh gosh, like, of course the one game that I come to like Ohtani's gonna, but then he ended up going like seven innings, two runs. And I think he had like a double too, or something like that, or a single and like stole a second. So it was like to even see him go seven innings and then hit a double. It's like, who's doing this? Who else is doing this? It's crazy. It's crazy. As far as like a stab in the back moment, I don't know. I mean, probably just my whole time in general just feels like it's the owner, Artie Moreno. Like, I don't know. I'm so far out on this guy. It's crazy. And so that's the only thing that gave me hope. Like at the end of the season was like, all right, he's looking into selling the team. It's like, great. Like get out faster, please. How can we speed up this process? Like,
yeah.
Just needing him to get out. And I don't know. He's all, like I said, he's always wanted to like spend money. So like he can be like, oh no, we're not like bad. We spend all this money and like these players just aren't panning out. But it just feels like the farm system is just a joke. And like just refusing to get these pitchers. They've tried like these 1 year deals with like, I remember they tried Tim Lincecum. They had Noah Syndergaard, and they've done like these 1 year deals with like names, but it's like these guys are they're kind of done by now. So
the A's will also do that too, by the way. Yeah. So just another play.
It's frustrating.
Yep.
It's frustrating, but
feel your pain.
And so I mean, I don't know what the answer is for them, but I mean the other options, it's like the Cardinals, they've got Nolan Arenado, they've got Paul Goldschmidt. They don't have Harrison Bader, so that's a win.
That's a big Bader guy.
Not, we can get into Bader. yeah, I guess I'll that's great. I'll jump into my second question. Looking at this article about, you know, picking the 10 rules of, you know, picking a new team. Okay. So just a couple of things to kind of keep in mind. Number three, no bandwagon jumping. So yeah. What would you say to somebody who is questioning, you know, maybe a potential move to the Cardinals with their recent success and, you know, all their superstardom they have over there. What
yeah,
would you say to that?
That's definitely something that's weighed into this process here. And it's kind of something that obviously I've had to weigh, but my thought process has always been like, if I were to join this team, it's me returning back to where it all started for me. That's how I fell in love with this game. And so like that team just has that factor where it's like, without them, I wouldn't even be an MLB fan free agent, because I wouldn't be into the MLB. I wouldn't have these favorite players that I like obsess over and love. So that's always my thing, is like, maybe it is a bandwagon because they have the success, but it's always that factor. And to be fair, I always said wherever Albert goes, like, that would be my team. And then he went to the Dodgers and I was like, all right, throw it all out the window. No chance.
I do respect that. I mean, you know, if we're going to talk about Yankees and Dodgers fans, it's better to be a fan of baseball than not a fan of baseball at all. So yeah, I respect that a lot.
Yeah. All right. Is it time?
Does anybody else have any questions?
No, I think we can get to it here. So Nick, are you prepared to let the world know what team will you be joining next year?
I feel like I have made a decision, and I just want to let everyone know, this is not an easy decision for me. It's something that I've thought about for months and months. And I will say, if we did this interview the other day, maybe I join a different team. But after, you know, kind of diving back into it, doing some more research, I feel like I've kind of settled on a team that I feel like, you know, this is who I'll be with, and
all right,
we'll just hope for the best. So with that being said,
oh, the hat's off.
I will be taking my MLB fandom too. I'm returning back home, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh,
no way.
Oh, no! No way!
Going back to Anaheim.
Oh man. I thought he was going to the Cards. I thought he was going to the Cards.
I was thinking D-backs.
Why would you do that?
No. Nick.
Nick, what happened?
The Angels. Nope. What did it come down to for you?
What's really boiled it down is it does break my heart that I know in the next couple of years, I do not think that they will be playoff, you know, bound. I don't see this great success, honestly, in the near future. It's just, once I kind of thought about it more, I'm just so emotionally attached to this team. It's hard, but I feel like, you know, it's just, I have to stay here. I want to root for a team that's close by, living in Oregon. I always go up to Seattle whenever they play there. I watch a game there. If I went to St. Louis, I don't know how often I'd really get to see them. So mm-hmm. I want to at least be able to watch them.
Fair play.
It might be frustrating, and I might be in the same spot next year, but hey, this is the life we live.
I respect it.
Does this decision kind of reaffirm the thought process that fans it's kind of a toxic relationship they have with their team, but some fans do enjoy the pain a little bit, you know?
This is what I tell all my friends that are like, why are you still an Angels fan? I love these guys so much that I absolutely hate them. I love them so much that I cannot stand them. Like,
mm-hmm.
I get so frustrated with it, but I'm only this frustrated because I love them and I want to see them win. I want to see them win. And I feel like, you know, obviously can't call me a bandwagon fan. The Angels are pretty trash, but maybe one day they make the rise up. And hey, I've been here. I've been through the down years, and here we are rising together.
Yeah.
Do we feel like we're rising? Do we feel like we're 100% committed to this decision? Or do you think like 4 or 5 years down the road, you know, Ohtani leaves, Trout leaves.
Yeah.
Are we going to still be here, or do we think we could see another free agency period from one Nick Kotchek?
So I honestly think Ohtani leaves this year. They said they wouldn't trade him in the offseason, but I mean, the guy, he deserves to win. Obviously Mike Trout deserves to win too, but I think they will have to get rid of Ohtani just because, like, they've got this massive contract with Trout. They've got a big deal with Rendon. It just feels like you're going to have to hand Ohtani this blank check, and, like, you're just going to have to take that. Like, he's worth all the money. He's insanely good. He's an elite talent. Oh, well, once in a generation player. And so I do think they'll have to get rid of him if, and like, you know what, that's something that I'll just have to accept. But if Trout left us, I would be quite heartbroken. But like at the same time, he deserves to be on a playoff team. Like the whole world deserves to see this guy in October hitting nukes. Like we all do. We all want to see it. So you know what? Maybe 4 or 5 years down the line, possibly MLB fan free agency. But for right now, Kyle, we're locked in. We're locked in.
Awesome. Boys, do you have any other questions for him?
Yeah, I got one. Just looking ahead to this first year of maybe a potential multi-year deal back with the Angels. Over under 85.5 wins next year for the Halos.
I am hammering that under. I'm hammering the under. They are an under 500
true fan.
For sure.
Fair enough.
I would love to look back on this podcast a year from now and be like, hey, Nick, you were completely wrong. Look at this team. They snuck into the playoffs, but I don't see it happening.
Oh, you're a realist, you know. Yeah. You're like the rest of us.
I've been through this before. They get my hopes up and then it comes crashing down.
Just come to Oakland. No hopes.
Boys, if we don't have any other questions for Nick, we appreciate you coming on the pod to make this huge announcement. Obviously, this is going to shake the Twitter universe if it still even exists through the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
But thanks for coming on the pod, Nick, and we look forward to following your fandom of the Angels over the years here.
Thank you very much for having me, boys. Maybe like middle of the season, we can get another interview. See,
absolutely.
Theme or something like that.
Absolutely.
Appreciate you guys for having me, though.
Thanks, Nick. Thanks, Nick. Nice all background. Right, Nick.
Thanks, man.
Tread.
Yes, Brad.
How would you like to see places like Rome, Venice, Barcelona, Ibiza, Paris, and London?
I mean, I don't really understand half the things you just told me, but that sounds great.
How about visiting every single island in Hawaii in a week while only unpacking your bag once?
That sounds like an absolute dream to me, Brad.
How about exploring dozens of different destinations throughout Western Europe in a 10-day period without blowing your budget on airfare?
That sounds awesome.
All of these once-in-a-lifetime trips with once-in-a-lifetime experiences can start at altamaritravel.com, where you can book your next cruise or river cruise anywhere from the coast of the United States to anywhere in Europe or all the way in the land down under in Australia, New Zealand, and Fiji. Tread, I know you'll like this. How does a big party boat with unlimited food and beverage that drops you off at heavily destinations every day sound to you?
That sounds like a dream, Brad.
Well, it's all a reality at altamaritravel.com. Book your dream vacation for cheaper today and go explore the Altamari or the high seas today.
Fire me up.
Fire me up, dude. Welcome to another episode of Baseball Development Dice. This is everyone's favorite segment. Today we have Brian Valentine from Lower Columbia College in Longview, Washington.
Go Red Devils.
Go Devils. And
that was how you guys do the fork.
We thought B-Val was so good on our last baseball development dice that we had him back again.
Drove all the way here.
Retained. Yep.
It's incredible how many trips he's made it down here.
And you still haven't changed your clothes.
It's wild.
Yeah.
Lucky sweater.
I tend to wear this because it's the most comfortable thing for me.
Are you even a hockey fan?
Yeah, dude, I'm a huge shark. Dude, sharks won tonight.
No Penguins.
Or the night.
No Penguins.
Never mind.
So the Niners were losing, and so he just immediately shifted to becoming a shark fan.
My Niners shoes are on, dog.
Yeah,
you're capping.
And they're really, really nice.
Cap or no cap.
They're really nice shoes.
That's all right. Anyways, welcome to Baseball Development Dice, everyone's favorite segment. We have six topics on the die. As everyone knows, 1 and 2 are Brad's topics, 3 and 4 are Ryan's topics, and 5 and 6 are my topics.
Who's Ryan?
Don't know.
Kraut. Ryan Kraut. Featuring Ryan Kraut. That's on our podcast name.
So, I made it, Mom.
Topic number one, machine work BP. Topic number two, summer ball versus lifting. Topic number three, power versus strength. Topic number four, prospect evaluation. Topic number five, leadership/culture styles. And then topic six is perceived velocity. So, B-Val, since you're back in town, instead of blowing on the dice this time, why don't you give it a roll?
I'll do both.
Hot shooter here. Oh,
two. We got two.
Two. What's two?
Summer ball. Oh, lifting.
This is great. So,
can we times that by two and go prospect evaluation?
Yeah. That's freaking B-Val, man.
B-Val is manipulating the dice. Oh, we're going look at straight. That,
and it's a four.
Oh, my God.
Boom. On camera.
Boom. 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 Hey.
Yes.
Boom. That's what we're going to do in the third base box. Anyways, B-Val, since you since this is your topic now, why don't you introduce the topic and get us going on
prospect evaluation. Yeah. Very broad.
Yes.
You chose it.
I did choose it, yeah.
Yes.
I chose it, but I'm not sure where to take it.
All right, so prospect evaluation.
I need to hand this one off.
I think, and I'm gonna alley-oop Kraut here. Okay. But I think in our game, as we may know, tradition is kind of king, and we kind of do things the same way we do things year after year, time after time. We mix in things here and there. We add a rap setup, get the portable TrackMan going, get some film, you know, things like that every now
pocket
and then.
Pocket radar.
Yeah, get the pocket dart out. But ultimately, most of our evaluation systems are very traditional and things that we just kind of keep running out there every single time we have a camp or have something where we're evaluating players. So I guess I throw it out there. What does the group think that are things we could change in the prospect evaluation setting? And just ideas to add or things that potentially you don't think are as important when evaluating a prospect at an event or just when you're recruiting them. So whoever wants to start. I'll start and say, and we'll just light this up. I think the 60 is something that is extremely overrated. I think it is a great way to express athleticism as well as sustained speed. But ultimately, I think the 30 is a much more valuable time considering we run 90 feet at a time. And often we don't really run 60 feet or 60 yards, sorry, in a straight line ever in the game of baseball. So I think that the 60 is something, though I do understand the value in it and why it is done in terms of, like, we have some sort of speed evaluation. Also, I think the 60 is tough because where you run the 60 does not hold constant. So sometimes we're in an outfield grass in the Northwest where it hasn't been mowed in 2 weeks, and it's 8 a.m. and it rained last night.
Yep.
So a 7-2 becomes a 7-5, or a 6-8 becomes a 7-1, right? Like, and so, or on the other side, you're on a fast track, you're on rock hard turf, and it's a really fast track for you to be able to boogie on. It's a nice warm day, you're feeling really good.
Or it's short.
Or it's short, right?
Seen that happen.
A great point. Or somebody's hot on the lodge. May or may
not have put it short.
Or if you're not doing.
Let's bump up the numbers, B-Val.
Or if you're not laser time, maybe you've got somebody who's hot on the watch, right? Yep. And then all of a sudden they're getting recruited potentially on that time. Or maybe not recruited on that time, depending on how you look at it.
Yep.
I think that's just one example.
Are you suggesting that potentially we change how we run the 60? Do you have any ideas? Because I have one.
Okay, go ahead, Kraut.
So if I'm doing this math correctly, the distance between second base and third base is 90 feet.
That's correct.
Which is 30 yards.
That's correct.
Yeah, and then well done.
Between third base and home, that's another 90 feet, 30 yards.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's 60 yards.
Correct.
So you're what not I'm proposing,
taking into account the lead as well, things to think about.
Let's just
this is not Little League. So.
From, we'll just call it, even with the base, we'll laser time them from second, get the round, get the turn.
Yeah, but he's saying you're not taking the lead into account of the game, like the actual style of the speed that will be demonstrated in game. There's going to be a lead in the game.
We're already not taking into account the type of run we do in a game.
True.
With the 60.
With the 60 as well, I guess.
Correct. Yeah.
I'm saying, why wouldn't we throw a turn in there? Like, just spitball
in here. Yeah, you can.
I think that's a good, a left turn being mixed into a running evaluation could be valuable, potentially. I agree.
And you have to be slightly more athletic, too, to turn on a base. Like, it demonstrates some athleticism.
And then you have to decel and then accelerate as well.
Yep.
I think, like, there's a lot.
How do they turn around bases? Do they take too long of a turn? Too big of a turn, I mean.
How athletic is that process? Do they look like an idiot trying to touch the base?
Yeah.
You know, things like that.
Yeah, good one.
Next, I'll go. I just want to be learned here. I really do.
Sure.
The MLB uses a 20 to 80 recruiting scale.
Yeah, scouting scale. Yeah.
Why?
Because that's the way we've always done things.
Yeah, so we're here to stop
that. Me that.
I think it was built on a universal language to speak of different tools. But, you know, just when you had to have those conversations where you couldn't say, hey, yeah, he's got arm strength. This is what his Rapsodo numbers are. He can spin it like this. You know, all that stuff. No, he's got a 60 arm from the outfield. You know,
somebody smarter than me and Bevall probably could tell you. But
speaking of evaluation,
I bet you could Google search it.
Yeah,
we do have computers. Dude.
Couple guys around
I'll
laptops.
I'll go nice. Ahead and
yep.
Let's just go around real quick, if you don't mind sharing some secrets. What kind of scales you use in recruiting players? More traditional?
Oh, what do you mean traditional? Like,
just in terms of the 20/80 or?
I've tried the 20/80, but I haven't been around high enough level ball players to, like, I've tried to be like, well, this is my 80, this is my 50.
How much do you have to see somebody to also be like, yeah, that's an 80? Like, if they catch one ball in center field, be like, well, that was pretty good.
I think you're looking for like certain movements, right?
Yeah.
So like that, you've seen high level ball players or winning baseball players because the end goal is to create the best club, right?
Yeah.
And so those movements that you've seen succeed in the game, I think that's what you are liking that
too. So at a showcase though, that's the question. Can you
writing down like,
can you see that
you saw from this individual little notes as opposed to not using like a numerical scale as much?
Yeah, I usually use more qualitative because I if I write a certain thing, that I know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
That's just how my brain works. I've seen guys use number systems like for everything. I've also kind of, and this is bad. Maybe this makes me bad at my job, but like at a big showcase, I have to see something that I like to write something down.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And if I don't have anything on them, I didn't like anything, so it doesn't matter. I don't.
Wow.
Like, there's only so much memory in the brain for me. I only don't have so much storage.
That's the style of seeing people.
And
too.
So, like, it's inside quick. Of our like inside of our like what we value, right? So, like, with catching, you got to be able to throw. Like, if you can't throw, you couldn't catch for. You know, when I worked at Linfield,
okay,
couldn't do it. It wouldn't.
Yep. So the arm is the plus. Yep. The arm is
so like if it was a minus arm, I would maybe write that just because like, hey, arm wasn't good enough. Not
just so you
not,
know if they're yeah. swinging
hard. So I'm covered that way.
Yeah. At these defensive showcases, they're just running them out, guy after guy after guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so like early on, like when we go to like Head First and like the Fall Classic and things like that, where we'd see a ton of players, I would try to write. So I like. On the side of my paper, I'd go, like, all the tools, right? So you have hit, power, field, run, and what am I missing?
Hit.
Defense. Hit for average, hit for power.
Yeah.
Run field.
And arm.
And arm. Okay. That's five, folks.
Yeah, there I am.
five tools.
Recruiting extraordinaire. It's not 11 p.m. at night. So I would, on the side, like, go off of, like, we did a, when I first started here, it was like a 1-7 scale. Like, crowd's familiar with that, right? It's similar to the 20/80 scale in a way.
Mm-hmm.
But I would basically try to grade out every single tool for every player. And I would use, like, 0.5s and all sorts of things.
Oh, like my gosh.
And what I came to realize was, like, I'm honestly seeing so many guys back-to-back-to-back and trying to write down grades for them that I feel like I'm just grading out everybody extremely similar. And I'm not actually, like, creating, like, a separating
factor. Or you start warping your memory of what outfielder 102 looked like, and you're writing about 107.
Yeah, and you're, like, moving. Yeah. But that I think, like, back to your point of, like, there's only so much to be had in the brain. Like,
yeah,
if I write something down about a guy and I'm not writing stuff down about other guys, like, I feel pretty strongly that I'm going to remember that guy.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have to try to keep notes on every single 100 player. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
20/80 scale. Ready for this?
Okay.
Credited to Branch Rickey. Okay, and whether he intended it or not, mirrors various scientific scales, with like a similar concept of every 10 points being one standard deviation off of the average.
Okay.
So your average MLB player is 50, and each way you move 10 points, you're one standard deviation away of what the average is for that tool.
Got it.
So like to have two standard deviations is typically like a significant like outlier type.
So it's much more statistical than we.
It's significantly more statistical.
Yeah, we're like, let's get rid of it. Oh wait, it actually makes a lot of sense.
Even if like the system wasn't like intended to be that, it actually ends up that way. So.
Well, I think that's where the five, the increments of five come in. We're like, yeah, no, he's a 45 arm. Better than a 40, but not quite a 50. Some scouts, like, no, it's either a 40
or a 50.
Or it's a 50. Yeah. You can't play in the middle.
No game. Fives.
Yeah.
No fives.
Is he average or is he
I'm
below?
I'm more on the side of, no, there can be a five.
Okay.
That to me, that makes more sense.
Context is everything.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Well, I think something that I've always thought is, like, interesting, I think we should value more in, like, the evaluation process, especially for hitters, is eyesight. Like, I don't think we do enough on, like...
That's super interesting.
Whether that's, like, prospect camp or, like, going to, like, a bigger event. Like, just doing a basic eye exam that's administered by whoever, like, could really hold a ton of value in it, evaluating what a guy can do and can't do in the box.
Yep.
Because there's so much research connected to, like, how, like... Recruiting coordinator, guys. It's a, well, they're both recruiting coordinators, so it doesn't really matter. But, anyways, so... I think there's a lot of research out there, right, that like the hand eye, like the way they work in unison, and just like too, like the difference between a big leaguer and a minor leaguer is the ability to recognize pitches, right? Like when you get to the big leagues, like that's what the separating factor is. It's why in our sport, like you get drafted and you don't go right to the big leagues because you have to start develop like a visual palette of what it looks like to be able to make good swing decisions and see what plus stuff looks like.
Yeah.
Right? It's not because your physical tools from whatever college you got drafted out of isn't ready to be a big leaguer. It's because you haven't been able to play the game and recognize the game as a big leaguer and see those things, right? So I think, like, with that in mind, like, I think, like, evaluating visual acuity and being able to, like, get a full eye exam on guys is just so valuable.
That's so interesting.
That we just have never cared about.
Are you talking about from college to pro, or are you talking about, like, high school?
I'm talking
college?
Everything. Like, I think at every level.
Do you think we have that already with in-game performance on hitters?
If you could not
pick up spin and pick up shapes and all that stuff, sure. Would you have the in-game success enough for a college recruiter or a college coach to think you are good enough to hit in their lineup?
Well, I think like you would be surprised, not just like who has good eyes and who doesn't. I think like that obviously kind of sticks out, but I think it's like the difference of like where they struggle, right? So like here at Pacific, we're lucky enough to have our optometry school do free evaluations for all of our hitters, and they can test them out through various like things
A lot of tests.
A lot of tests.
It's extensive to a degree.
And then they can find out, like, is their depth perception wrong, like, poor? Is it, like, visual contrast? Like, do they struggle with, like, light acceptance?
Hand-eye coordination.
Right? There's, like,
surprised.
A lot. Is it reaction time? Is it whatever, right? Mm-hmm. So you can find out, like, their sliders on what they're good at and what they're not good at as opposed to the average.
And I think that... from a player development perspective is huge.
But then I think like you can start individualizing, and me and Kurt have talked about this, like you can start individualizing your hitting approach based on like how you see the ball, right?
Oh, sure.
So it's like, is your depth perception bad? Yes or no? Okay, well then now like that guy's going to struggle with anything that like changeup's going to be a real problem for him. So it's like that guy has to guess pitches a little more than the guy who maybe like has really good visual contrast and can like follow the ball. Maybe that guy's a little more reactive and he's on multiple pitches. Maybe he's more focused to his zone or what have you, right? Or am I speaking out of turn there,
Crowley? No, absolutely. I think, like, it's right on the head. Like, you know, we have to, as hitters, cheat in certain situations, especially, you know, if the guy's not picking up the pitch, you know, rather well. So, I mean, yeah, absolutely. You're right on the head.
So, yeah, I think, like, there's so much not, like, uncovered. Like,
oh yeah, I agree with that.
Do things,
sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And I just think like our evaluation process could
probably do a better job in uncovering.
I would love if they made an eyesight rankings in Major League Baseball. Like, could you imagine if like Mike Trout, who has arguably one of the greatest eyes in baseball, Juan Soto, for example, right, zone control to the max, has bad eyesight? Could you imagine that? Like,
well, it's not a thing, right?
Yeah, but I'm interested to know if that's a thing. I think that's fascinating because I think that hitters specifically see spin different. If you can identify spin, you can identify the way the ball moves. I mean, high carry, you can literally see the ball. It feels like it's rising. Like, people who have bad eyesight see the ball differently. There's different feels.
Well, some guys don't even see spin.
Exactly.
They don't even see the seams. Like, they have no idea.
Yeah.
What do you mean slider spin? What do you mean bullet spin? What do you mean
dot? What do you mean dot? Yeah, exactly. Right?
Like, you hear that all the time out of guys, and if you know that they can't see a dot or recognize that, then it's probably important that you're cheating pitches and, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they don't really.
And if some high school kid at a showcase.
It's the other way around. I don't know, like, what the answer is. I just think, like, exposing that stuff and then, like, potentially finding ways to develop it is just such an untapped place in baseball. And I think, like, too, like, I think everybody really, like, harkens on, like, reaction time, right? Like baseball players have really good reaction time. It's not true. Like, baseball players have the same reaction time as every other human. No, I'm telling you, they've done studies on Major League Baseball players. And
okay. I just think nature of the sport.
Read the sports gene and go read the chapter about chunking.
Okay.
And it's essentially the idea, like, scientists believe that it's physically impossible on human reaction time for a hitter to take the message of a 90-mile-per-hour fastball and send it to their body to be able to track that ball and be able to hit it.
Okay.
But guys hit it, right?
Yeah.
And how do they do that? They're anticipating, like, where the ball is going to go.
Yeah.
So because
I don't believe, like, just from broad, I obviously haven't read the book, but how is that not good reactions?
No, it's not reaction time. It's you're anticipating, like, what is going to happen. You're basically, like, reverse engineering based on what you've seen in your life.
So there's a skill.
On where the ball is going. And that's also why you see big leaguers swing at pitches that are bouncing in the other batter's box, right? Yep. It's because there's that first, like, visual decision where it's like
the dark
that first feel.
Yes.
Yeah, the first little bit of ball flight where you're like, yes, yes, okay, I'm in the swing. And then the rest of your swing, you're tracking the ball to contact to be like, yep, I was right, or nope, I'm wrong. And that's when you see the late shutdown or check swing,
cool.
Right?
Yeah.
So, like, and again, like, everybody talks about, like, visual bat to ball, and you see videos of Giancarlo Stanton. He's not even, like, staring at the ball, not making contact. His eyes are, like, way past home plate. Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, like, he's already started his swing. His path is going where it's going. He doesn't have to track the bat to ball because his body just automatically is automated
yes.
to stay on that path.
Yes.
And he's
however,
seen that pitch
so
hundreds of times.
I think the swing is the wrong thing to challenge here. I think the take is what makes that real. An active take. Like, literally, there are most baseball players at the major league level, this is my claim, you can call it wrong, but can start their swing in their mind, get to a stance where they look like they are about to swing the bat, and they stop their swing. Like, an active take. Is that not reaction?
Well, no, but it's you're basically taking a picture of the initial ball flight based on visual cues.
Yeah.
And this is why when we talk about, like, machine hitting eventually, when we'll get to that, like, machine hitting is great for seeing shapes and seeing spin, but, like, you're not building visual cues on, like, what arm action looks like, what those angles look like out of slot, and the different things that guys posture as. Like, for example, like, when guys have tells, right, when their hands work different on different pitches, like, guys will do different things in their delivery, whether they slow down, right? Like, it's easy to see a guy slow down his changeup or slow down his delivery on changeup and that become an auto take.
Yep.
And it's not like you're watching the changeup all the way through. You've just noticed that guy has slowed down.
Yeah.
So you are now like, oh, I've seen this before. This is a changeup. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And, like, that's why pitching coaches are always on guys. But that's just, like, one example of, like, you have a visual palette that you have built by playing baseball. Like, think about the first time you saw a curveball when you were 12 years old.
Yeah.
You're like, scary. Oh my God, what just happened? Is this some sort of wizardry?
Yeah.
The ball just moved the other direction.
Yeah.
And it had a big loop to it.
That was me, actually, my freshman year of college.
but, but, My point is, that's great. My point is,
me too.
Like,
me too.
You eventually start being like, oh, yeah, that's a curveball, right?
Yeah.
Or like, oh, yeah, that's what a two seam looks like. Or, you know what I'm saying? And so, like, that's the separator between big leaguers and minor leaguers. Because you go to a minor league baseball game, how many of those guys don't have tools? Right? They're all toolsy. That's why they're it. You get drafted on tools. You make it to the big leagues based on your swing decisions and zone control. Like, just straight up.
Yeah.
Other than, like, the defensive aspect, obviously. But I just think that we don't value, like, building visual palettes for players enough. And I don't think
100%.
We measure, like, just the visual, like, catalog, or I don't know, catalogs.
And it would be so easy, too.
That's my point.
So, okay, now I'm going to peel this back.
Yeah.
You talk about machine BP.
Yes.
And talking about, you know.
Multiple dice topics, guy.
That's okay. Let's keep it
going. Let's get in.
But, like, let's just peel that back a little bit of, like, what's the alternative to machine BP for the visual standpoint of reading balls out of hand, different angles, different body positions. Mm-hmm. How do you do that in training?
No, there's no perfect way to do it other than hitting live as much as you can off.
Or having a coach that spins.
And that's why summer ball has way more value, in my opinion, for hitters early on in their like college career than it does for pitchers. Mm-hmm. Because hitters, like, there is a reactionary, like, visual part
it's open
of the
loop.
Game.
It's an open loop.
That you have to continue to build and build. Like, for your example, like, you didn't pick up arm action until you were your fifth year, senior year. You know what I mean?
That's true.
You know what I mean? So, like, that's my – and, like, it may seem silly, but, like, once you – if you could have made that connection earlier or, like, you figured out, like, kind of the visual part of hitting earlier, that would have changed your whole career.
Isn't that crazy, Bebo?
Right?
Doesn't surprise you, I
bet. It makes sense, right?
It makes sense, but I was a little surprised with the success you were able to have.
Well, which is still – that's incredible, right? Like,
right.
He was able to do what he did.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, no,
that's
for
just
sure.
Getting – being right a lot because I never
– absolutely.
Which I think makes you, like, an incredible – like, it gives you a great foundation to be a great hitting coach.
For sure.
Is, like, you understand sequencing and that part of the game and kind of the chess.
Who is your – who is the hardest pitching coach in the conference?
To face?
Yeah.
Well,
besides Treadway and InterSquad games,
Mine's
kind of raked off me. I feel like I was in
really
your head for like 4 years,
bro. Not just because you're here, but you guys never gave in. That was the thing. You never gave in once.
Yeah,
and you guys were like, "Oh, he just keeps swinging."
You should hear the conversations of
the
dugout.
Dugout and be like, "Stop swinging," and I'd be like, "I can."
Yeah, but again, that's my point. Is like,
yeah,
he can't. Because visually, he doesn't know how.
I saw the slider. Right. I was like, finally, they hung a slider. Bang-o, gonna hit a homer. Strikeout for the fourth time today. Like,
but it was also like you'd come back in, right?
Pitch,
and
I just couldn't.
Exactly. You'd be like, I think it does this. And we'd be like, okay. And then there'd be somebody who comes in who'd be like, oh, no, you can see like slightly big dot out of hand when he throws a slider. And Kraut would never do that. Like, we would always go to Kraut and be like, kind of moves a little horizontally. And he'd be like, okay, that will work for me.
But
like, that's what it was for him.
It also, like, this concept also plays into, like, multiple time through the order penalty, right? Like, stats get better for hitters the more they see pitchers.
Yeah.
Like, in-game, and, like, fatigue plays into that, obviously.
Right.
But the familiarity.
Name of the podcast.
effect, like, plays into that.
For sure.
Right? So, I don't know. I just think that we really undervalue vision.
And, oh, like, I agree.
And then, like, having, like, conversations with your hitters about what they're seeing.
Where are you looking?
And really just, like...
What do you got?
Yeah. We got reminded of that our fifth year in
just
college baseball.
Diving into that.
Like, we had the discussion of the logo on the hat. And we were talking about it, and Kraut brought up a great point. This was a discussion we were having late in our season of our last year, and he was like, yeah, but we don't talk about that. No one's told me to do that since I was a sophomore or junior in high school. Like, we don't discuss.
Like, talk about 12U travel baseball.
See? And, like...
Pick up the ball early. Okay. Like, what does that even mean?
Yeah.
I watched a sports science video about Evan Longoria looking at the foul pole and then the pitcher's logo, and then I was like, this doesn't make any sense to me. Like, I don't get it.
Well, the eyes, like, move from the elbow to the hand. Like, they pick up the elbow first, and the hand comes, and then that stays constant, right? The forearm and hand aren't going to move in
relation. The conversation we had about a week and a half ago with our guys, because one of our coaches, he's fresh off playing, Coach Kalia, and so he dices our hitters
Awesome.
Every week.
That's great.
So it's part of our competitive Thursdays, but he gets up on the mound and just dices them. And so we were talking about, hey, you know, were there any tells? We were just talking about picking up, you know, his pitches out of his hand and stuff like that. And one of our hitters brought up how he looks at glove positioning of when they're set and when they're coming through the zone. Because more often than not, their
hand follows suit.
Where their glove is. Like if you're a low slot guy, you're not going to be.
Well, you see that a lot.
You're not going to be up here if you're in release from here.
So many people are like taught equal opposite too. So like when they're kids, like it's like those things are mirroring each other northwest.
And I was like, oh, I didn't even. Yeah, no, that makes 100% sense. But
that's a cool cue. I like that.
We talked about like hard and soft focus a lot like this past year. Just with some of the hitters, and like you'd be surprised how many guys like look at the pitcher in the eyes or just like stupid stuff that
I'm like, what?
Oh, just the general
direction. Like, I don't
like the general guys direction. Come
to me. Yeah,
like,
I'm looking at
I don't know where to look. And I was like, what if I told you to hard focus? Like, and I was using, of course, the most ambiguous term. I said clicks. I said, focus 2 clicks to the left of his head, right handed thrower.
Mm-hmm.
I came back, I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
It's like,
no, it's
it's crazy. Just telling a kid like just follow like look for the ball out of his hand. Yeah. Like just look at his hand. And then they start following at handbreak and they're like, oh yeah.
Well, that's the thing too, is like
oh yeah, I see wrist position.
The pitcher
I see,
who hides it, right?
Right.
It's because he's giving you visual cues as late as possible.
Yes.
And it's as consistent as possible.
Yes.
And that's why like coaches in big leagues are constantly talking about tunneling. And it's also why we don't really talk about, and this is another hot take, is like not talking about tunneling with D3 players, because like it's really important with your big leaguers, right? Because you are now facing the most difficult stuff to hit, and you're in the big leagues because you're one of the best pitch recognition guys on earth, right? So that's what you've been deemed to be able to do, is handle this at a high level. So like the more you can mirror that and make that hard for the hitter in terms of swing decision, that's why that becomes really valuable. And plus, you're a big leaguer, so your stuff's already good. So, like, why not focus on that kind of stuff?
Yeah.
Whereas, like, at the D3 level, it's like, all right, like, these guys, like, might go sleep 8 hours. They might go sleep 4 hours. They might have a test this week. Not only, like, how varied their lives are, like, couple that with, like, we have a bunch of guys who throw 83 to 85 miles per hour, which isn't, like, in any stretch of the imagination in baseball plus stuff, at least in, like, the high amateur level or like low professional. So instead of like trying to get that guy's stuff to all look the same, like let's try to develop his stuff to be really good. And like whether he changes his slot on slider versus his fastball, if both of those pitches are like firm / like dirty compared to the level he's playing at, they still got to hit that pitch even if they recognize it, right? Which at our level like doesn't typically happen as well as it would at like a professional level, right? So like I think, but I mean, to your point, like back down or just back down the visual like line, like I just think as hard as it can be made on the hitter, right, as possible, you want to do. But then as a hitter, like picking up just like whatever intricacy you can in that guy's visual cues that he's providing you, like that's just so valuable. So
yeah.
I'm sorry, I kind of like rambled on there and kind of bounced around.
But like what, how did, so I guess, and Kraut, maybe I'll throw this to you. How do you... You know, because I love machine for shape, spin, challenge, decision make, you know, all that type of stuff. But how do you, from the visual standpoint and a little bit of the timing standpoint, how do you get, is there another way to get what the machine provides you with all that other stuff, with the visual and the timing piece?
So
in a training environment without purely just having a pitcher out there.
Yeah, something weird that... when just hitting with guys that I've done a couple times, is just like ask them where they look when they hit off a machine.
Yeah,
I know I've done that.
Or when they start.
Yeah.
When are you starting?
Yeah.
What are you? I when the ball gets put in the machine. Well, that's like you starting your swing when he's like releasing the baseball.
Yeah, let's think about that for a second.
And the conversations when you tell them that.
Yeah.
Like whoa. Oh. Yeah, I'm a little late. Yeah.
So a lot of guys, like, they will...
That makes sense.
They'll still be in rhythm as the ball is, like, hitting a ramp. They haven't even started a negative move or anything.
Let's hope their feeder isn't as all over the place. Shout out Ryan Kraut.
Oh, whatever.
Best feeder in five years.
Let's keep it on the rails, but I like the chatter.
But just, like, asking a guy to stop following the ball and just have a soft focus on whatever the feeder's doing, and to trick themselves into like, okay, when his arm goes up, I'm going to treat that as like the leg lift of this pitcher, and just force myself to not be late, and then hard focus on the whole of the machine.
So Kraut has a, you want to share your little secret that you did for us when we were. This like thing where he would take two.
You can tell me off offer.
No,
it's not it. Not a secret. I just wanted to like say, but he has like two baseballs, and what he'll do is he'll have the ball he feeds, and then he'll have a ball take up the hole of where the ball's about to shoot out. So there's a gap in any hack right behind where the ball's about to shoot out.
Yeah.
So right before he puts the ball in the ramp, no matter how high the ramp is, the white ball comes in where the ball's going to exit, and he holds it there.
I'll just show them like where this.
So this is where the ball's going to come out. So that's your hard focus point. And here is your timing that with my based on what my arm is doing when I place the ball on the machine.
It's like you can still see my arm going to the ramp if you're still focusing on the.
But you know where the ball is coming out.
And I think teaching guys hard focus versus soft focus is huge in terms of picking up the ball, because, like, you might be asking a guy to hard focus on like the batter's eye, which is the weirdest thing to say, right? Or like trust that he needs to hard focus, like. Like I said, it's ambiguous. Two clicks, so like it makes zero sense. But like,
what's a click?
Not looking at the pitcher or looking at what he's doing, and just using kind of your peripheral vision to notice his leg lift and use that for timing.
It's a dance.
Just to like get that little edge in terms of your vision.
For sure.
So I think kind of like at least explaining that while you're using machines. Obviously, like, we're never gonna get something as good as hitting off of live guys.
Right.
And. You can double hack, you can do all these things, but like nothing's going to beat the live ABs. But the more we can make those every swing we take, because we take a lot of swings off the machine, training, you know, vision as you're hitting off the machine. And you brought up earlier, I don't know if this was on the pod or off camera, but like use shitty balls too.
Yeah.
Like use shitty balls when you hit machines.
Force decisions. Yeah, it's going
to create the variability.
Absolutely. Anytime you can force decisions on guys in training, for me, why would you not do that?
Yeah.
And well, too many guys get automated, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's why I don't love the, bang slider for 15 minutes. Well, anybody can program themselves to hit that, right, if you're at the college level, in theory.
Mm-hmm.
So put in a restraint of two plates. Put in, you know, it's two different sliders.
So that's what C.J. Perry's choice when I asked you earlier in the interview was no money, no option. What do you buy? His was the machine where you can implement spin rate and different pitches.
Yeah, like pitch.
So it can go fastball, changeup, slider, whatever. Yeah.
Not necessarily the eye pitch, but the. Oh, I just got. We had one at Linfield, but you remember that big beast looking machine in our cages.
Yep.
Where you can program it back like different sequences and stuff.
Yeah.
That would be a wish list. Only for like $5,000.
Oh, yeah, only $5,000. Yeah.
But I mean, in terms of buying a machine, like I'd much rather have that than a big hack.
Yeah.
Just because you can program, you can literally program a catalog of different sequences and like program 1 through 10. Guys can go in there and just press and program and then.
Can you manipulate angle on that? Or is it just spin and shape?
It's just spin and shape. I don't.
So it's coming out of the same slot every time.
Yeah.
I would say that's the only downfall.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
But I mean, still valuable. Like right. Again, I get frustrated with the machine, like just doing too much machine work. In my opinion, like I just think.
Right, and I always equate that to like. Throwing your guys into the deep end, right? So like, or like during a training session, like a batting, like a BP, where like you utilize the cages and on field or whatever, and like you have a rotation,
mm-hmm.
like where are they able to breathe a little bit, right? And like maybe feel their swing, instead of like going machine angle on the field where it's like,
No, I get it.
Like some of those days happen.
Yeah.
Like where you have to do that.
Yeah.
But like
it has its five, benefits.
Five, seven Absolutely. Days a week where like they don't have anywhere to breathe of like
yeah.
the constraints are so just
heavy.
Yeah.
Heavy where it's like they just – and I felt like I felt in 21 that was a little bit like we kind of flooded our hitters a little bit in that sense mm-hmm. in 21.
Because hitting as much as it is like preparing them and making the environment hard, like you do want to – eventually get them confident as well.
Absolutely. Right?
It's absolutely. Like, I think too, like, you can make the training so varied to a point like you're making the focus, like, whether you, no matter what, like, modality you're using, like, you can constantly change the goal to try to just build skills.
Well, even, yeah, and even if you vary BP, so, like, yeah, it's we call it them attack rounds, but, like, where basically your attack, you know, intent is to attack, hit a double, get some honey, middle of the field. We use a 12-inch block to hunt a visual over the middle of the plate. So it's 12-inch, like, it's hunt the 12 rounds.
Yeah.
Here we go. Mm. It's not just four attack where you just go and fill your swing a little bit. Like, you know what I mean? You can manipulate BP rounds where there's a certain goal, you know? But it's not like you're – not like tricking them, but you're kind of like tricking them into what you're saying is training 100%. Something else.
I think, too, just, like, also rewarding just, like, good decisions.
For sure.
You know what I mean? Like – whether, like, a take is sick sometimes. You know what I mean?
So,
like,
yeah.
Like, especially in a tough
takes tell a story.
Even if it's a strike,
shout out,
too.
Shout out Chase, like, Anderson.
That's another thing, man. Like, if you're seeing a strike in the zone and you don't swing, that's okay. You know what I mean?
Because I hate
– if you're in between and you're not ready to do damage, unless it's, like, two strikes, depending on how you feel about the two-strike approach, right? Like, if it's two strikes and you're trying to take some swing out and put the ball in play, what have you, or the runner's in scoring position, whatever.
Yeah, I think context matters. You get
three strikes.
I've always – like, when you talk about two-strike, too, not to get off, like
– yeah, we're going crazy.
Yeah.
I love it.
To talk about two strikes, like, one, don't get to two strikes. Like, hunt a pitch earlier.
Yeah.
Who said that
also,
before?
But also
– get it done early.
If you get to 2K and there's nobody on – who cares if you strike out?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, in a way. Well, okay. Like,
I love it.
Well,
but no, like,
counter-argument. Counter-argument.
Can I finish my
absolutely, because
take?
Context I care matters. About you.
Go ahead.
So, like, let's say it's the second inning, 0-0, two outs, 0-2, nobody on. Like, yeah, try to hit a double. Like, we don't need to, like, 4-3 to the second baseman.
Sure.
But.
And Kraut loves that.
If it's second and third, no outs. In the eighth,
obviously.
Let's get some barrel on the baseball.
Yeah, obviously.
Let's just get something.
That context is dramatic, but I appreciate the clarity.
Yeah.
I will say, though, like, depending on what baseball level you play at, like, a ball in play means something different at the D3 level than it does at the big league level.
Totally.
BAPIP in D3 is 340.
Yep.
Like, one of three balls put in play is going to be a hit.
Yep.
So, my, like,
which I guess think I have a tougher a time, stat,
like, accepting strikeouts when you play lower, smaller college baseball.
BABIP, should we explain BABIP?
Average on balls in play.
You have a harder time accepting?
I have a harder time accepting strikeouts, especially when the stuff that you're seeing also isn't necessarily plus. Though I understand the concept of doing damage is important, right? I understand the context of acquiring as many bases as possible with one swing of the bat is the most efficient way to play offense. Though I will say, like,
it's not bunting.
When bunting still has its place, but that's another contextual conversation.
Yep.
But, like, when there's so much variance in what defense you're seeing plus what field you're playing at, like, at our level, like, we play on a bunch of weird fields, you know what I mean? Where they're not well taken care of and it's cold and it's raining and there are just so many factors.
Are you calling some people out right now?
I'm not calling anybody
out. Names and places. You could.
I'm not going to do that. But I'm just going to say, like, there are places where it's more advantageous to put the ball in play.
Absolutely.
Than taking a strikeout.
Totally.
Right? And I understand, like, the context of the second. But, like, I think as a one-off, yeah. But if it becomes, like, a plague on your team, like, you're just wasting at-bats.
No, totally. And part of that is, too, like, be like trying to get your hitters, like you talked about confidence in the earlier in the segment. Yep. Like, I never understood trying to create fear with two strikes.
Sure. Yeah.
In that approach with your hitters. And to me, it's like context matters when you strike out. So that helps build the confidence of, like, being comfortable with 2K. But definitely something that needs to be, you know, you need to have a training environment for two strikes, for sure.
And I want everyone – sorry. I just think that is extremely, extremely important for young guys, that if anybody's listening to this and you're in high school, like, take that take that into account. That is very, very important because fear is implemented with two strikes at the younger, at the lower level.
Yeah, it's difficult. Hardos and they,
it is very difficult.
Well, and that's where that like my original thought of like, well, what's the difference between me striking out in the second
and grounding out?
And grounding out.
Yeah,
sure.
Now you bring up good points.
Yeah. And then too, like I think at the major league level as well, like with the shift now being banned, like. Putting the ball in play is now more advantageous. Like, even though the defenses are still very good, they're not going to be placed in the same ways that they have been in the past.
Yeah.
So, like, ball in play has more value. You know what I mean? Like, sure. It's going to continue to have more value. It's also why teams that put the ball in play the most in the playoffs typically see the most success. Right? Like,
for sure.
Like, over a sample, yes. Like, it's okay to take some Ks, especially at the big league level when you're getting paid to do damage, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think, like, at the small college level especially, I don't love the mindset, though, like, I understand, like, you don't want to create fear within your lineup of striking out. But I also don't think it's like, dude, it's all good, you know, you struck out three times today with nobody on base, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know if it's, like, the right message.
There's a fine balance.
Yeah. So, I don't, that's all I just wanted
to think. When I think, and, like, kind of talking about different levels, like, being wood bat for us, bunting is very much in play.
Yeah.
And just like.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Especially with 18 and 19 year olds.
Yeah. So, yeah.
So, good. Yeah. Thanks,
Bebo. Context matters.